an Ironic Media production. Visit us at ironicmedia.com.
Being around, living with somebody for 24 hours a day and not being able to have a sane conversation. I think one of the key things that really helped me so much is calling my friends or my sisters on the phone just to talk, to vent and unload. And it helped me so much to be able to talk to people.
Hello, and welcome to Dementia Discussions, the podcast for and about caregivers. If you'd like to share your caregiving story with me, your fellow caregiver would be so appreciative, and so would I. So please call me and leave a message at 310-362-8232 or send me an email at dementiadiscussions.net. Today, my guest is Nancy. Nancy is in my Dementia with Lewy Body Support Group through UCLA, the Mary S. Easton Center. And so, Nancy, it's great to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. So you are caring for your friend, and I've never met your friend. All our support groups have been on Zoom. So we've never met. I've never met you in person either. Tell us a little bit about who you're caring for.
Sure. I'm caring for a close friend of mine. I've known him for about 40 years, but we lived in different states. And so about a year and a half ago, he asked me to come and live with him because his Parkinson's was getting worse and he couldn't live by himself anymore. I thought, oh, yeah, I'll give it a shot. I can help him out for a little while and see how it goes. So that was a year and a half ago, and I'm still here with him. He's 81 years old, and he has Parkinson's disease with Lewy body dementia. He's deteriorating pretty quickly, both physically and cognitively. When I first got here, we would go on hikes for a mile. We would go to movies, go out to dinner. And now, yesterday, we were sitting on the couch and he tried to stand up and he said, how do you stand up? He didn't even know how to stand up. And his brain is just going downhill. He can't find the right words to say when he speaks. And so he'll say things to me like, did you give our schedule to the birds? Things like that. And it's been a lot to handle because I wasn't working with anybody with Parkinson's or with Lewy body dementia, but it has helped me so much to listen and be a part of the support group that Barbara has, because I've learned so much from them. I know many of you out there have read things, seen things on YouTube, or you read articles, or you read books, but when somebody, another caregiver actually says something to you in different words than the book said, it starts to sink in.
That's the beauty of support group, right?
Yeah.
When other people tell your story.
Yeah. Yeah. For example, it always says in all the literature, don't argue with them, a patient with dementia. And it's like, yeah, okay, I get it. Don't argue. But what I didn't really understand was don't even try to explain. I kept thinking, well, if I explain it to him in more simple language, or if I write it out, or if I draw pictures, I sort of went into a teacher mode, I think, thinking, oh, if I can just be more patient and I can just show him and teach him. Well, that doesn't work. It doesn't work. So you just sort of have to meet them where they're at and don't argue with them. Unless it's a safety issue, but you just agree with them or say, well, that's interesting. When he has his hallucinations and he sees animals out in the backyard, my first reaction is to say, there's no animals out there. What are you seeing? And now I've learned to kick back and go, well, that's cool. Yeah, there's some animals out there. How interesting. You just sort of have to have a sense of humor about it and just relax about it. You can't argue or explain. Don't explain.
Right. And that's what we talk about. ARC, don't argue, reason, explain, or don't argue, reason, confront.
Yeah.
It's so hard to do.
It's so hard to do. Yeah, but that's one of the keys. And the other key thing that you guys taught me in the support group is everything will take longer. I remember another caregiver said that. Everything. When we're going outside and he's putting his jacket on and it takes him 10 minutes to put his arms in the jacket. I used to get, let me just help you. Let me just do it. But now I just stand there and think to myself, everything will take longer because he wants to do it himself. And if you could just remember those words, then it gives you more patience.
Right. Everything takes longer. So when you first came a year and a half ago, were you knew about the Parkinson's, but you didn't know about the dementia?
Correct. Correct. I could tell on the phone that he would be forgetful and things, but I didn't realize how bad the dementia could get or it was. I just knew about Parkinson's, you know? Mm. And so I was thinking in my mind, oh, okay, he's going to be a little bit slower and stiffer and maybe a little shaky. That's what I was thinking. To me, the Parkinson's is so much more minor compared to the dementia. The dementia part is what is so hard, I think, on the caregiver.
I guess he can't remember how to do so many things. I mean, if he's not remembering how to stand up.
Yeah.
Are you having to help him with everything?
He wants to do things for himself. So he gets dressed in the morning, but it takes him an hour to get dressed. And he'll take his pants on and off. On and off. I don't know why. Or he'll make his bed after he gets up, but that takes him a good 20 minutes because he pulls up the sheet and then he pulls it down and then he pulls it up and it has to be a certain way. We're not on a time clock. It's like, I don't really care how long it takes him. And he doesn't get frustrated, which is something. He doesn't get frustrated with how long it takes him to do things. So I don't care if it takes him, you know, an hour to get out of bed and roll in the morning. His shirts might be on inside out, but who cares?
So he doesn't get frustrated. You probably do. There's probably a lot of deep breaths. You're probably a lot of.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When he eats and he misses his mouth very frequently. So then it's all down and it's on the floor. So I just recently got it's called an adult bib, clothes protector is what I call it, for him when he eats. And then I just have a handheld vacuum and vacuum underneath, sort of like we did when our kids were in high chairs.
Right. Yes, exactly. They have these extra long bibs, you know, extra long, can cover his pants too. But
yeah.
Oh, goodness. Which must be really something after it's taken an hour for him to get dressed and then to sit and eat and have food all over his clothes, especially if you have to go somewhere.
Yeah, but we really haven't been going places too much just because he's afraid because of COVID. And we don't go outside for walks like we used to because it's really hard for him to like just stand up, to take a couple steps, even though we have a walker now that he'll use to walk from the kitchen to the bathroom. But the newest thing that's going to be happening is we're starting the hospice process. That'll be interesting because we were just finishing up with home health and home health physical therapy. And we met with a neurologist just a week ago or so, and we're going to start hospice.
So he wasn't progressing home health PT.
Oh no, he's getting worse.
He's getting worse.
The physical therapy, they used to do standing exercises and reaching and walking a little bit, helping him swing his arms, telling him how to walk. He can't do that anymore. Oh, I mean, the physical therapy now, they're back to how do you stand up? And then they're just doing sitting down exercises with him now rather than up exercises. So it's decreasing. Things aren't getting better. And he knows that. That's the other thing about Lewy body dementia is they have moments where they're clear. And then they have moments where they're not clear at all.
Yeah, but when he's clear, is he depressed? Does he get depressed about all of this?
When he's clear, well, yeah, a little bit. When he's clear, he'll say, wow, my disease is really getting worse. I can tell it's getting worse. And he'll ask me questions now. How much longer do you think I'm going to have to live? And what do people with Parkinson's die from? He has those moments where he asks questions that make sense, which is nice. And then sometimes then he's like totally off and he's not there at all.
Why? What will he say?
He'll say, well, I'm going to go upstairs and go on my iron lung machine for a while. I was like, okay, have fun. What?
What? Yeah. Knock yourself out with that. Yeah.
And then his hallucinations used to freak me out a little bit, but I'm enjoying them. He'll say, oh, why is that lady standing there with the clock on her head? Wow, that's interesting. Wow, she has a clock on her head, huh? Yeah, yeah.
And is there any thread of truth? Like, mm-hmm. is there actually a clock on the wall? No. Or no, mm-hmm. nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nothing that he could sort of visually misinterpret or anything. Like the animals in the backyard, maybe a bird flew in the backyard or something. You know, I'm always ready to agree with him that could be true, so.
Do they agitate him, the hallucinations?
No. Yeah. No. Luckily, they've been just animals, small animals, lady at the clock. Yeah, no, nothing scary, nothing. But speak of scary, he has had REM sleep disorder for several years. So at night, he acts out his nightmares. And so he screams very loud and thrashes in the middle of the night because he can't control his body when he's having a nightmare. He acts out his dreams. It can be really scary, you know, when we're sound asleep and you can hear him in the other room. Ah! And you think something horrible is happening, but he's just dreaming.
Wow. So do you go running in there?
Yeah. So what I've learned too, and I'm so glad people are going to listen to this podcast too, because if you have anybody with REM sleep disorder, they act out their nightmares. And the thing of it is they're sleeping. So don't make the mistake I made to go up and hold him and say, it's okay. It's okay. Don't touch them because they'll hit you or kick you because they're still sleeping. Mm-hmm. So you have to stand back and turn the light on and say, it's just a dream. Wake up. It's just a dream. Wake up. And then he'll wake up and he'll be okay.
But, wow. So that's your way of calming him down.
Yeah. Don't go close because mm-hmm. it can be dangerous.
Mm. Mm-hmm. People do talk about that in a group.
Oh, they do?
The REM sleep disorder.
Yeah. Right?
You've heard people talk about. Yeah.
I haven't heard it too much in my group. Of course, I've been skipping out lately because people have been crazy. But
people have talked about it. Yeah.
Yeah. And you see little snippets of it on YouTube, but it's the screaming. When you're in a sound sleep and you can hear the screaming or the thrashing or just the horrible noise that comes from his body.
Sounds so scary. Like you're sleeping soundly and then someone's screaming. You're probably thinking like, oh my God, the place is on fire. Yes. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. And luckily for about a month now, we have nighttime caregivers. So I'm only with him half the day. So from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., I have somebody here right now, for example, watching him. So at least I'm not doing 24 hours a day.
Yeah. So talk about that a little bit, because we know how hard that is to bring in outside help. So tell us like what led you to that?
Yeah. What led me to that was he was hospitalized. And when patients have dementia and they're hospitalized, they go down on, they get so much worse mentally. He couldn't walk at all. He definitely couldn't stand on the day of discharge. He couldn't control his urine. It was just really bad. The case manager, she gave me a list of caregiving agencies. She said, here's three caregiving agencies. And then she put one on top and she said, we've heard good things about this agency. And so, of course, I tried that one out first. And when I called the number, the guy answered. And he immediately put me at ease, telling me how a big percentage of his clientele are dementia and that his agency helps. And so luckily I went with that agency and it's been working out really good, really good.
Did you have to go through a few caregivers to find someone that was the right fit?
What he did was he gave me their best for the first, because it's 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week. And mm-hmm. so we have three different caregivers because nobody works 7 days a week, 12-hour shifts. So the first very first caregiver, he gave me one of their best, and she's wonderful, wonderful. And then the other caregiver is great too, great. The third one that we have just one night a week, she's all, but she takes good care of him. So maybe I don't hit it off with her, or maybe she could be a little bit cleaner or whatever. But really, what's important is that she takes good care and that he's safe. And that's what's most important.
It does come down to that. The most basic thing, as long as she's taking good care of him, does anything else really matter?
Yeah. So luckily, that's all been working out so far, knock on wood. I hope it continues.
How is that for you? How is it sleeping in the house, knowing that there's another person there?
Well, it's fine because I'm upstairs and they're all downstairs. Mm-hmm. So I have a little bit of separation, and they're all really nice people. And only once or twice, because I told them when I orient them, really, I'm upstairs. If something comes up, just come get me. But they've been very respectful, and they not once or twice came up to bother me or ask me a question. I really am off the clock. I really don't have to worry about things when they're here. And just getting a good night's sleep, oh my gosh.
A world of difference, right? Like you can fill up your patient's cup again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, because then in the morning, it's like, I'm refreshed. I can handle this again. Where if you're a caregiver all day and all night, that's so draining. So draining.
Yeah. So draining. No question about it. Yeah. And you just get irritable and resentful and angry, right?
Yeah.
Now, how did your friend take to having someone there? Was he upset that there's a stranger in the house now in his room?
How we presented it was, we live in Los Angeles, and how we presented it was that we were getting him a personal assistant, because he was saying, I don't need anybody to take care of me. I can take care of myself. And we're like, yeah, I know you can take care of yourself, but you're going to have a personal assistant. It's like when you want your coffee heated up or you want somebody to get cookies for you, you'll have a personal assistant. So that's how we broached it.
And was he someone in life who had a personal assistant, like in his career?
He could have, but no, he didn't. But his brain is going, he thought, oh, okay.
Yeah, great. A personal assistant. I need a personal assistant right now. Mm-hmm. That sounds okay.
Yeah, but he'll still say to me, I don't really need anybody at night. And yet he does. He forgets where the bathroom is and they have to guide him into the bathroom. Or he never wandered. He never went outside and wandered around. But lately he's been trying to open the door to go out at night. But we have a house alarm. So if a door would open, the alarm would go. And he walks so slowly. He wouldn't get very far anyway, but.
Right. But now you can sleep without worrying that he's going to the front door, trying to get out.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Falling on the way to the bathroom.
And luckily he hasn't been, when he was in the hospital, he was incontinent, but that's improved. But he does things like he urinates in the bathtub. I'll find him sitting on the toilet with his underpants on. And he's peeing through his underpants, but it's going in the toilet. So It's not a big deal.
Will he wear pull-ups or he won't wear pull-ups?
I haven't broached that yet because he's only for a couple times sat and peed through his underpants to go. And only a couple times did he pee on the floor. So it's not a big problem yet. But I think when hospice gets involved, I think they'll help me out with that.
Well, and it sounds like he can still let you know when he has to go to the bathroom. Whether he does it right in the bathroom, that's another story, but at least he's getting there. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's putting too much toilet paper down the toilet. And so we've had to call the plumber a couple times, but oh well.
Yeah. Not the worst thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Annoying, certainly in the moment, really irritating in the moment, but.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I've learned too, with my experience, is when we go to the doctor, it's really hard. The doctor's here, I sit right beside my friend and the doctor's asking questions and my friend will say something that's not true. Like the doctor would say, how's your walking? Have you been exercising? Have you been going for walks? And my friend might say, oh, yeah, we go for a walk every other day. And it's not true. And so at first, I didn't want to be the bad guy. You know, I just sat there. But now I speak up and I'll say, no, the truth is, this is what it is. And then, of course, my friend gets a little upset when I correct him, when I tell the truth. But he sort of forgets then. So he doesn't really hold it against me, you know, later. So it's best to tell the doctors the truth. Don't hold back because you think you're going to hurt feelings, you know?
Right. And usually the doctor can tell when something's not true because you're making these faces or shaking your head in the background.
Yeah.
But sometimes I say to families, you know what, just like email the doctor or fax the doctor a status update so that you don't have to have that awkward conversation in the room.
And that's what I did with a recent hospice request with the neurologist. I printed out, well, it was almost a full page of an update for her so that I didn't have to say those horrible things in his presence.
Yeah, because it feels bad. And you're right. It creates tension between the two of you. And even if it doesn't last very long.
It feels bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the other thing. And then the other hard part for me, I think, is when he gets angry and he yells at me, or when friends come over and he'll say very negative things about me to the friends that aren't true. Those things still are hard for me to take, but they all know that it's not the truth. But for example, his friends were over and they were talking about, we're eating something. Oh, this is really good. And my friend said, yeah, but you should try Nancy's cooking. All she ever does is open up a can and put it on the plate. And it's like, that is so not true. But I didn't say anything. I just sat there and put my head down. And then everybody quickly changed the subject. And I actually said something to him later. You really hurt my feelings when you said, and he said, I never said that.
He didn't remember. Right. So here you're feeling hurt, of course, and it sticks with you, but he didn't remember anything.
Yeah.
And we hear that, right, in group where, like, if you lose your temper and you feel so horrible and it sticks with you for a long time, but they've forgotten about it.
Yeah. It's amazing. And it's hard to be around. Well, not since I have the nighttime caregiver, but being around living with somebody for 24 hours a day and not being able to have a sane conversation. I think one of the key things that really helped me so much is calling my friends or my sisters on the phone just to talk, to vent and unload. And it helped me so much to be able to talk to people.
Absolutely. And have a regular conversation where there's give and take, there's dialogue. Right? Rational, sensible.
Yes.
Yeah,
that means a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Keeps you grounded.
But then it came to the point where I was thinking, well, it's not all about me. I mean, poor guy, he's the one that's sick. Why am I the one that needs somebody to talk to? I was feeling a little bit selfish there for a while, but I got over that really quickly.
Yeah, good. Do you ever, like, when the caregiver gets there, do you ever go out in the evening? Because you could do that. Now.
I could, but yeah, sometimes I'll run to the grocery store when she gets
there. I don't mean run to the grocery store, like go out for dinner or something.
I should.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. I never thought of that.
Nancy, you're so funny.
No, I never did.
Yeah, I mean, even with COVID, you could go to an outdoor, you know, restaurant and eat outdoors.
All I've been doing is running to the grocery store or going for a 20-minute walk. Yeah, but I never thought I could actually go out or go to a movie or do something fun for myself. It's so funny. I haven't even thought of that.
Yeah, you deserve it after being a caregiver for 12 hours all day.
Yeah.
So you had said something about the bib and sweeping up under the table, like when your kids were little. Are there kids involved in helping you at all?
No, he was never married, so he has no children.
I see.
So I have a son who comes to visit once in a while, and that really helps my sanity. Oh, and the other thing that really helps my sanity Of course, you'll probably think I'm losing my sanity, but I'm talking to my cat because my cat's always here. When I had a really bad day, or he's just ranting and raving about nonsensical words, I'll go into the bedroom and start talking to my cat to help ground me again.
Absolutely. Unconditional love. Yes. Yeah. Perfect. Gosh. You need outlets, whatever outlet it is. So getting together with friends, calling people, connecting, movies, restaurants, whatever, your cat, exercise, all of it, all good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I did go a couple months ago, I did have a week off and I went away for a week. And that really is one of the key things to help your sanity is get away when you can.
Talk about that a little bit, because I know you were nervous about leaving.
So. Oh, yeah. Because his sister was coming and she's elderly too. And I was just worried how that was going to go, but it went fine. And I just worried too much, but it helped me so much. It helped my brain. It helped me get a second wind again to get away.
Absolutely. You were so looking forward to that trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It gave you something to look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
And right. To keep your spirits up.
Yeah.
Right. I remember when you came back, we were all talking about planning your next trip.
Yeah. And that was one of my girlfriends. She said, you have to plan every 3 months. We need to plan a week away or something. And I was like, yeah, that sounds good. But yeah, am I doing it?
That's okay. You will do it.
Yeah.
It's never too late. You can always plan a trip, even a long weekend. It doesn't have to be a week long trip.
Yeah. As long as I can get somebody here.
Does it feel like now that you've done that once, so now that you have the nighttime caregivers, like you've sort of gotten over that threshold of pulling people in?
What do you mean?
Well, like it was so hard to even think about that because it was just you.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, how can I do that? Who could I get? Yeah. How's that going to go? But then once you did it and it went okay.
Like, yeah, no, that's fine. Because I know the day is going to come where I'm not going to be able to handle it during the day. I know that he's going to eventually be bedridden and be incontinent. I'm not going to be able to handle, I can't lift him. So I'm already planning, but the seed is planted in my brain that there'll come a time where we're going to have 24-hour nursing care in the home. And when that happens, then I'll adjust to however I want to adjust to that. But yeah.
Sometimes it's a matter of learning techniques, how to roll him from one side to the other. There are definitely techniques, how to change diapers, chucks, all those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's not walking anymore, there are ways to do that.
Yeah, but I don't know if I have that in me to do that. I don't know.
Good. That your limitation. Like you know your limits. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as helping him to the bathroom and giving him a shower, I can do that. But when it comes to the point of wearing diapers or cleaning up after him, I think that's
beyond what you want to do, beyond what you can do.
Yeah.
That's okay. It's okay to draw that line. A lot of people do. Doesn't mean you're a failure. It doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You pull in more help.
Yeah. And just this whole long process of going through all these different kinds of changes. That's why it's so important for people to attend those support groups that you guys run. It helps your sanity so much.
I do think it helps to hear other people when you're feeling so alone out there.
Mm-hmm.
It does help to hear other people and where they're at and what they're struggling with. And oftentimes it's the same struggles you're having.
Yeah. And it's interesting to listen to their stories. You always compare yourself. I do. And some people have it a whole lot easier than I do because their loved one isn't as bad. But then some people have it way worse than I do. And that's then when my ears perk up and I'm listening because I learned so much from their stories and how they've dealt with things. And then you're always giving us tidbits of advice throughout the group meeting. So it's so good.
We have a good group. It's true. Yeah. It works really well. And just think you're doing the same for people in the group. So your stories are helping people. They're leaning in and listening to you because you're either somewhere on the continuum. And so you help people as much as they help you.
Yeah. And it's heavy though. Those support groups, even though people make it light and say jokes and we laugh, but it's a sad subject.
It is. Everyone's on a downward trajectory. So it's sad. And we laugh, but
yeah.
Yeah, it is also sad.
Yeah, and there's really no happy ending. I mean, the ending is that you're prepared for the end and that they're prepared for their end.
I mean, I guess without you, your friend would really not have been able to stay at home.
No. Mm-mm.
Not at all.
No, and he's real adamant about staying at home and dying at home. He would have just had to have hired, the family would have had to hire agency people for around the clock. You know, so
they must be so appreciative of you.
Yeah, they are. And they're always thanking me and they are very appreciative. And that means a lot. You know, and that means a lot that they realize that it's not easy, but
it's not easy. Yeah. Did you give up like a career to take care of him?
No, I'm still working on my computer and during day hours, I sit on my computer. So luckily I can come and go from my computer. I log in and work and then he sleeps in, but then I can stop working and go make him breakfast. And then while he's eating breakfast, I go back to work. So far, I can still keep working remotely on my computer.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
it really is.
And it might come where I can't do that anymore. And then I'm going to have to make some decisions about either retiring from my work or not doing being caregiver anymore. And I don't want to think about that because I don't know what I would decide. You know, so
Well, it sounds like he's declining fairly rapidly. And if he's going on hospice, sadly it might not be so long. Yeah. So
and
I guess my advice would be to say whatever you've always wanted to say to him. Don't leave anything unsaid. This is your time to say whatever it is he wanted to say while he can still understand, because he has lucid times, you said.
And I try to get him to talk too about dying and his wishes. And he doesn't want to talk about that. He said it's too final. I can't talk about those things. Yeah. But lately he has been saying things like talking about he does want to be cremated and where he wants his ashes to be scattered. So he is starting to talk about that. Now he's starting to realize that he is going to die someday and that he needs to start telling us what his wishes are, you know?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And you're giving him the space, the permission, and saying to him, I can take it.
Mm-hmm.
I can take whatever, like here I am, I'm opening this door.
Yeah.
And it's hard for both of us, but I'm here and I can take it.
Mm-hmm.
I can contain whatever you're going to say. So let's have this conversation.
Yeah.
At first, maybe he was resistant, but now he's talking about it. He's telling you what he wants.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. You are going to heaven.
My cat is, because she's so patient and listens to me. So she's for sure going to the rainbow.
Going to heaven. The two of you. Oh, gosh. Well, Nancy, thank you for coming on today.
You're welcome.
I'm talking about your story. Really, I appreciate you. And I love having you in group.
Oh, thank you so much, Barbara. You've helped me so much in that group, as the other caregivers have helped me too. But it's been wonderful meeting you and working with you. Thank you.
And you as well. Thank wonderful you. Meeting you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us today on another episode of Dementia Discussions. If you're a caregiver or know someone who's a caregiver that would like to be a guest on the show, please call me at 310-362-8232 or go to dementiadiscussions.net/contact and let me know. I would love to have you. Remember that you can follow Dementia Discussions on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and many more. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, it would mean a lot if you would leave me a review. For any other information about this podcast, please visit me at dementiadiscussions.net. And please share this podcast with someone you know if you think it may help. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you here again next time on Dementia Discussions.